From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Pro Worlds is around the corner. It was just National Disc Golf Day. PGA election results are in. It is a good time for disc golf. We're going to talk about all that this week on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, joined as always by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, how was your National Disc Golf Day on Saturday?
It was great. I wish I had played a little bit better, but it was filled with disc golf, hours and hours of disc golf.
that's all you can ask for, right?
Yeah,
it was good.
Time
it was
with good people for sure.
It was really cool to see everyone, you know, posting about where they were playing and who they were playing with, and just generally just so excited about the day. Like, I was just, you know, it's one of those things where obviously, like, everyone, you know, we're in this sphere where everyone loves disc golf and gets to play it all the time. But like, it's really cool when there's something like nationally recognized like that on a larger scale that you can share with like your family and friends.
I actually have a friend.
Hey, this is a thing.
Yeah. I have a friend who she's never played disc golf, but she's very supportive of me. She actually buys some of my fundraiser discs and just puts them on her wall or as keepsakes or whatever. But she is a fellow marketing professional, and she always is looking for observances that tie into her industry. And she was like, hey, this Saturday's National Disc Golf Day. And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
It was really cool that some people outside of the sport were recognizing.
We did share it with quite a few other days. It was like,
yeah,
National Mustard Day.
Mm.
And Mead Day, I believe. Like you know,
wine?
Like the old, yeah, exactly. And then there were a couple other ones, but hey, National Disc Golf Day, we will take it. And the other thing that I hope people realize is, like, yeah, it's called National Disc Golf Day, but PDGA is international. We are more than happy to see people celebrate it worldwide. So hope everyone had fun. It was a good time. Sarah, thank you for recording a little welcome message for everyone,
yeah,
for our
fun
social media platforms. That was a good time.
That was actually my best drive on that hole.
Well, I'm glad you saved it when you were on film then, though.
Yeah. I wish I had had that same drive during the Music City Open, but
yeah. Well, we'll talk Music City. We'll let you break that down in a couple minutes, but slightly, no offense to Music City, but slightly more pressing matters, because the board of directors election results were announced on Thursday. And Sarah, I know you had a chance to see who was elected. If people listening to the show have not had a chance to see who was elected, you can go right now to the front page of pdga.com, and you can just listen in the next 5 seconds when I say it, because you'll see that Elaine King and Laura Nagtegal were the two candidates who were elected. So congratulations to Elaine and Laura. Thank you to Trevor Harbolt for his service. You know, he will serve out the rest of his term up through the end of August. And you know, really, really cool just to see some of the stats and everything. I will say, we gotta get some more people voting, Sarah.
Yeah, I agree. I think I saw the raw numbers. But
yeah,
what,
it's like, we had like, I think it was like just a shade under 13%. It was like 12.99% of the population of, you know, PDGA members.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's not bad. It could be better.
Yeah. I mean, maybe people feel that if they aren't super knowledgeable about anyone, they don't want to just vote for someone out of sheer name recognition or photo or anything like that. But
yeah,
I don't know.
It could be.
Yeah. I mean, it takes work to do a little bit of research, to either listen to the show, that the special edition show that you recorded interviewing all of them, or reading all of their bios. It takes a little work.
But either way,
I hope everyone will continue doing it in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, and hey, We are very appreciative for the 12.99% of you who did vote. And you know, you take you take pride in being a member, and we appreciate that. You know, one thing that I'm doing right now that I hadn't done yet is I'm looking at all of the write-in candidates, because it comes on the results that we post on the website.
Any good ones?
Todd Lyon must have written it himself. You think Todd wrote in himself?
Knowing Todd, yes.
Just kidding, Todd. We know you're listening. Yeah, Todd got a write-in vote. Write-ins of note. Seppa Payu got a write-in. Nate Sexton with a write-in.
Okay.
My friend Alan Risley, AJ's dad, got a write-in. Pretty interesting. Sarah Nicholson got a write-in vote.
Oh, nice. That's not a vote.
Couple write-ins there. So kind of fun. I wonder if some of those were probably actually for, no, those were actually for the camp. I was wondering if those ended up being for state coordinators, but those ended up being for, you know, for board of directors. So, hey, people, if you got a write-in, you're already doing well in your candidacy. Maybe you need to get on board with that.
Start campaigning now.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, my other kind of takes from the election, number one, Elaine King, Hall of Fame member, incumbent, great to have some more, stability on the board, to have a carryover board member, I think. And, you know, anyone who's talked to Elaine for more than 30 seconds knows how intelligent she is and how many great ideas she helps to move forward, especially on the women's side of the sport. And so just having her input on the board is tremendous. And then the same with Laura. Now, the really cool part that I think is that Laura has a background in the music industry and, you know, has in the past kind of talked about trying to get our tournaments and our events to run more like events, like getting some festival things in there and elements like that. So I'll be curious to see if she can push any of those you know, initiatives. And then, you know, without getting too deep down the rabbit hole, I want to say personally, I'm very proud of our membership. You know, this is a pretty historic vote. Laura is openly transgender, and I'm proud of the fact that our members, you know, looked at her qualifications and candidacy based on that, and you know, not just based on her gender, but based on, you know, just her qualifications. So just me as a human being, I was really proud to see how that shook out, and I just it made me have some pride to be a disc golfer and know that we are in that kind of welcoming community.
I feel the exact same way. I couldn't have said it better. And I don't know how long the article had been up before I saw it, but I remember seeing that Elaine and Laura got nominated or elected, and messaged you, and I was like, oh my gosh, with a million exclamation points. You're like, I was waiting for you to see it.
Yep. So yeah. I mean,
I was super pumped. I didn't want to say it at the time or campaign for anyone in particular, but I was pulling for those two just because I think it's really important to have more female representation. And also they just come from such unique backgrounds. Elaine has been in the sport for forever and has such a unique perspective on where the sport has been.
But she also comes from like the huge professional corporate business industry as well.
Yep.
And I think that's really something that people sometimes forget about Elaine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I also, I mean, neither one of them are from the US originally, or Laura still doesn't live here. So I think that's pretty cool to have sort of an international perspective or spin on the board as well. So
I agree. I think, and that's something I forgot to mention too, having a European board member on not just the PDGA Europe board, but the global board of directors, I think is really important, especially, you know, given the growth that we see in Europe every year. So if you want to learn more about Laura and Elaine, you can go over to pdga.com right now and find their candidate bios and statements. And then also we had Tina Riekola who ended up being the PDGA Europe board candidate who was voted in. And then we have a whole slew of state and provincial coordinators who were voted in. And I'm going to apologize in advance that I'm not going to read all of them, but we do appreciate all these volunteers because our state and provincial coordinators and our board members are all volunteers. So we appreciate everyone stepping up to help, you know, support the game in your region, in your state, on the board. We can't have the PDGA without these very important volunteers. So on behalf of the rest of our staff and our current board, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's volunteering. Yeehaw. All right. So with that in mind, let's do this. We're going to go straight into, I think, our interview this week. And then, Sarah, you and I can get to the rest of the show. We're going to talk, we're going to play my interview with, you've probably heard of him before, two-time world champion Ricky Wysocki. Wanted to catch up with him last week after he DNF'd at Idlewild. Didn't get a chance to. Caught up with him last night and had a fun talk. So we're going to take a break, play that right now. And then when we come back, Sarah and I will talk Music City and some upcoming stuff for Pro World. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, welcome back to the show, Mr. Two-time world champion, Ricky Wysocki. Rick, how's it going today, man? How's everything been lately?
Really good. Been good. I just kind of got getting recovered from my injury at Idlewild, so that I haven't really played a tournament in the States since I got back from Europe because of the injury. So it's good to come back, and I feel like I'm 100%. I'm going to be 100% for Worlds. I went to a chiropractor and a physical therapist to get my neck straightened out. Got some exercises I'm doing, and I feel like it's healing up, and I don't think it's going to be an issue for Worlds.
Good, man. You know, as much as I hate to admit it, that was kind of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show. It's always a big deal when players DNF, but especially you. I can't remember many times. How many times have you even DNF'd in your career? Can you think of how many?
Honestly, I think that was the first one.
Okay, I figured it was. So, I mean, tell me what happened. I mean, I know it was obviously bugging you at the beginning of Idlewild. You know, walk me back through it. What happened to trigger this kind of neck injury?
Yeah, so basically what happened was I was warming up just like I always do before the first round of Idlewild. Nothing out of the ordinary. Just so I went to the practice field and threw a couple shots, and like on my, it was pretty early. It was like my first or second shot of the day. And I felt a tweak, and I just kind of kept throwing. And I just like, yeah, I didn't really feel it right immediately. And then it started to stiffen up when I went to the practice basket. And then throughout the rest of the round, it started getting really bad to the point where it's like, I could barely throw. My sidearm was like, I couldn't turn my neck. My range of motion was like, if I had to put a percentage on it, maybe like 40-30%.
Wow.
I couldn't barely move my neck. So it was super painful and I couldn't move it. So it was basically just like stiff. And I couldn't, like, I basically just could look straight ahead. I couldn't look left and right, which is brutal out there. I mean, that course is super tight and challenging. So it's never good to play injured, but especially on that course. So I told myself, you know, I'm going to play through the round and hopefully, you know, and see how it feels on Saturday. So I finished the round. I mean, it was super painful on the first day. I mean, I fought through it. And
I was going to say, it looked like you had to take some, were you taking off of some shots? Like, it looked like you didn't have quite the power you normally do.
Oh, yeah. No, I basically was playing at, you know, 30-40% like of my power for the round. So yeah, I was completely not playing my game at all, but I basically just told myself that I'm going to finish the round in hopes that I, you know, maybe felt better on the next day to where I could finish and compete and maybe come back and have a chance to win come Sunday. But yeah, I was just so stiff. It got even more stiff over as the night went on and in the morning. So I just like, yeah, I mean, and, you know, obviously I want to get healthy for Worlds, but I mean, even if I tried to play, I wouldn't even be worth a crap because, just because my range of motion wasn't there, you know, I'd be throwing, you know, like I said, 30-40% power shots and I couldn't control it because I was just trying to baby my neck. So yeah, it just completely affected my swing to the point where I couldn't even barely throw.
Wow. Yeah. What are you, 26 now?
Yeah,
26. You're getting old, man. Really, that's all it comes down to.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
I mean, do you Do you think maybe some of the traveling, obviously, I mean, I know I did a long flight back from Europe as well. Do you think that had anything to do with it, or you think it was just kind of a fluky situation?
Yeah, I honestly just think it was really fluky, weird situation where I warmed up, I stretched, I did a lot of the disc golf strong work, pre-round stretches that we normally do. So yeah, it was just super fluky. And I, like I said, the last couple of days I've been practicing hasn't even bothered me at all.
Okay.
Like I said, I basically didn't touch a disc until the last couple of days after Idlewild. I took like a week off straight, didn't touch a disc. And so now that's why I'm giving myself a lot of time to practice for Worlds since I took a lot of time off.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I'm like I said, I went to a specialist in Iowa where he actually specializes. He's worked with a lot of actual UFC fighters on their necks and stuff. And I got a recommendation from Seth, and he helped me out with that. And this guy was really helpful. He gave me an adjustment, gave me some type of like heat therapy and all kinds of stuff. So
Okay.
yeah, he straightened me out.
But I know we're still a week out from Worlds, but what percentage would you say you're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically playing round. I played two rounds today. I played Eureka and Northwoods today, getting reps in. And yeah, I'm basically throwing full shots, not worrying about it at all. So it's
Okay.
basically, yeah, I'm basically 99 to 100%.
Awesome, man. I'm happy
Yeah.
to hear that, and I think
Yeah.
that just amps up the competition even more.
Yeah.
And before we talk about Worlds, I do want to backtrack a little bit. I want to talk about Europe, as much as maybe that's a tournament you want to leave in the rearview mirror, but that's kind of what I want to ask. Like, what's the process for you, mentally getting over a tournament like that where you're playing well, you're in the driver's seat, then obviously the final round just it wasn't you weren't on your game. How do you go about putting that behind you for Worlds?
Yeah, I mean, it's the type of thing that where, I had a great chance to win at the first major of the year, and obviously I didn't capitalize on it, but there's a lot of positives I can take from it. And I not that I like to attribute a lot of my performances to luck, but I mean I had some pretty bad luck. I had to spit out coming down coming down the stretch on like hole 10, I think, and I hit like a bird feeder and stopped OB.
Sure.
So I mean there's just some super fluky stuff that doesn't normally happen. But yeah, I mean, all in all, it was a great, I played, well from pretty much the entire round, the whole tournament until the final day. But I mean, yeah, like I said, I wasn't playing my best, but it's something to where, I was happy to be in that spot. And, like I said, we all know how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you can play great and have one bad round, and that happens to be the final round in front of everybody and for all the marbles. But I'm definitely not gonna let it get under my skin because it's world championships are here, and that's my next preparation. But yeah, I mean overall Europe was a great experience. I played in the lead group almost every time, played in front of the huge gallery, and throw like I said, I threw a lot of great shots, and there's a lot of good shots that I can look back on and say, hey, I executed really well under pressure,
That
and that's the stuff that
that
I'm
roller on
yeah.
four.
Yeah, I just made a post about it on Instagram. I mean, that was like one of my best shots of the year for
Oh
sure for
yeah.
me. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shots that didn't go my way and I didn't execute to the fullest, but there's also a lot of shots that I did execute really well. Like I said, with the big gallery and the pressure, and I think those are the shots that I'm gonna try and remember and try and replicate here at the Worlds coming up in next week. So. Yeah, I mean, I can look at both sides, but I'm gonna choose to look at the positive and look at the good shots. I mean, that's really the best way to have a outlook on it for me.
So speaking of Worlds, obviously you went two in a row, and then last year it wasn't even you, it wasn't Paul McBeth, it was Greg Barsby, which was an awesome thing for everyone to see. But I'm curious for you personally, how hungry have you been this last year? Like, what's the feeling been like since Smuggler's Notch last year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've honestly the last couple of days I felt super motivated. I mean, just obviously I want to feel motivated all year, but the Worlds, I mean, that's for me, that's the one to, if I had to play one tournament every year, it'd be the World Championships. And obviously for the title, I mean, that's this is the title, this is the holy grail of our sport for person, that's what I believe. you know, I want to have the label. I want to have that. That's what people look back on the most, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, even longer. They say, you know, yeah, Ricky won the Worlds in 2016, 2017, and hopefully I can say more years after that. So, I mean, it just sets a legacy for, you know, as a player like me. I've been playing and touring for as long as I have, almost, you know, almost 10 years. And it's like that, you know, winning Worlds is what sets a legacy and what people remember down the road. So, I mean, that's the number one most important thing for me, is having the titles and having the world championship titles, to say the least. I mean, obviously majors are a number that, you know, you want to get a lot of majors and a lot of wins, but more importantly, Worlds. I mean, that's just the thing. You can make someone's single career like Barsby. I mean, his career's made no matter what he does. I mean,
right.
You can say whatever you want about him. He won a world championship, and that's that, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think it's motivating itself, me knowing what a title like that can do for someone's career and what it can do for someone like me to add another one. I mean, so it's been great motivation for me to practice and train this week. And I feel like the last couple of days I've been more motivated than I've ever been. So I think that's really exciting for me and my game, and really being able to practice that motivated. I mean, that really makes a big difference, being able to practice with that motivation in my head and floating around in my atmosphere in every time I practice.
So now, excuse me, obviously the open division has Eureka and Northwood, and you know, no knock on Eureka, but it's a known commodity at this point. We have Ledgestone there every year for the past 5 years or so. And you've fared fairly well there in your career. Only one time outside the top 10, and I think we'll give you a pass on that, because if I recall correctly, that was literally the week after your first world championship.
Yeah, so, I think it was. You're right.
So, what's going on at Northwood, man? Give us the scoop. How are you feeling on that course? Do you think that course is going to be the difference maker this year?
I truly believe so. Yeah. So it's basically the total opposite of Eureka. I mean, I think it complements Eureka really well, just because of the fact that it has polar opposite shots. I mean, there's par fours and par fives just like Eureka, but there's really no out of bounds. It's all the out of bounds is basically going off the fairway. That's the OB at Northwoods, because everything's so tight that where, you know, there's just so many tunnel shots. There's a lot of tunnel shots. I think that's the name of the game out there, is tunnel shots. I mean, a lot of the par threes, even the par fours and the par five, is all tunnel shot basically the whole way. So there's a lot of straight shots. I mean, the person that can throw, obviously you can say that a lot of times, but at Eureka, you know, it's more of the hyzer Olympics, so to say, where a lot of the shots are hyzers fading away from the water. Here, it's not like that. You're throwing a lot of mid-ranges and fairway drivers into landing zones, to where if you don't hit the landing zone, you're basically just scrambling for a par at that point. So, you know, whereas Eureka, you can be off a little bit here and there and still get birdies. Out at Northwoods, you're completely punished, you know, par or bogey or worse, if you just barely miss your line. So it's a punishing course. It's super wooded, but it's a type of course to where if you're on and someone else is off, you can gain strokes, and you can definitely move up the leaderboard if you need to make a move when we're playing out there. So yeah, it's going to be a very challenging course. I mean, the scores, you know, scores are going to be, you know, I think honestly it's going to be not as much separation as people would think, because it's a lot harder than course than we're used to, because I think that a lot of the hot scores may be between 8 and 10 under, as opposed to most of the time the hot scores are between, you know, 10 and 12, 13
sure,
under.
Sure.
So I think the hot scores are going to be a little lower just from, you know, average. I'm sure someone's going to pop off, but you know, as far as an average hot score, you know, someone may shoot a 10 or 11 one round, but then, you know, the hot score the next day may be an, you know, 8 or 9. So it's just the kind of course to where it can vary. The hot score can vary and a good round can vary. I mean, one day you might play there and the whole field may shoot great, and the next day you know everyone may shoot not so great, and you shoot a 4, 5, 6 under and it's a great score. So it's just the kind of course to where it changes day to day how people play it, and it's just yeah, it's a really challenging course, but I think it's, like I said, a great compliment to Eureka, and I'm really excited to get out there and attack it.
Do you keep score during practice, or are you just throwing lots of different shots?
So I haven't played. Normally, I the first couple rounds I play a course, I'm just throwing a lot of shots, dialing, you know, just seeing all the different distances, all landing zones and stuff. So I haven't played enough to actually even really play a score round, but I think I will play score rounds later in the week once I've got maybe 4, 5, 6 rounds under my belt.
So right, I'll be sure to check back.
and I'll let you know what my average, you know, if I average rounds are out there.
I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
A couple more questions and I'll let you get back to life, man. But yeah, you know, something I've noticed with you this year, and this is kind of a change, I think, from the past, is, you know, out on the course, you're kind of on your own wavelength. You're a little more reserved. You're a little more, I don't want to say a little more focused, because everybody's focused, but you're just, you're a little more, gosh, I can't even think of the right word, but you're less outgoing. You're a little less open on the course sometimes, but I've noticed this year you seem to be, you know, a little more cheerful, a little, you know, a little more smiles from Ricky, a little more laughter. What do you think? And I don't know if you feel that way, but
yeah.
Do you think there's been a difference? And if so, why do you think that's been different this year?
I don't know. I think it's just being on the road so long, and it's like, you just want to, I don't know. I just want to make sure that I'm having a good time. I mean, that's just such a grind that it's like, if I just look at it as a grind every day of the week, and then I go to the tournament, and it's the same thing. It's grinding out. You know, it just gets monotonous, and that's how you burn yourself out. So I've just kind of told myself to loosen up a little bit. Obviously not to the point where it's affecting my game, but loosen up to the fact where, you know, if I like someone in the group and we're, you know, we want to have a chat here and there when we're not throwing on a backup or something, I can let go and really partake in stuff that I maybe not haven't in the past, just to loosen it up a little bit for me, and to where I'm not so tense 100% of the time, to where in the past it's like, as soon as the tournament started, I'd be focused and tense and from start to finish. Now I think there's times, like you said, where I'm, you know, laughing, joking around with my buddies, whoever's in the group with me, you know, making jokes, you know, talking crap back and forth to each other, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely a lot more of that. I think it's just, you know, me traveling and playing so much to where it's like I have to do that, otherwise you'll just go crazy.
Okay.
You know.
yeah, man. Now, I still hear you call yourself a jerk quite often. Does it ever get worse than that? Do you ever drop the words that we can't say on this show to yourself?
Not much. I'm not much of a cusser. I don't know. I've never really been, but you know, there's definitely times in my head where I have cussed at myself. I'll say that.
I don't hear it out loud, but I always get a good chuckle when I hear you calling yourself a jerk, and it's usually a good shot for most people.
Right. Yeah, I guess just the perfectionist in me coming out when I don't execute it, or I, you know, maybe I just barely miss the shot and it gets lucky and it wasn't exactly what I was looking for, so I call myself a jerk, or I call myself a name, so that way next time I do better.
Oh man. All right, so how did you hook up with Dylan Cease, White Sox pitcher? I saw you were playing around with him recently. How did that come to pass?
So basically we got, I don't remember, we got linked up through Instagram. Him and his brother were just kind of following me you know, I was following him. He had, you know, like I said, he's pitching in the MLB right now. He's actually starting for the Red Sox or White Sox. He's pitching tomorrow. I was talking to him, but actually, yeah. So we were kind of linked up there, and we've been in touch for the last maybe year or so. We were trying to play around. He was in spring training when I was in Arizona. So we were kind of in the same city. We never linked up there. And so we just kind of kept in touch. He followed me, you know, playing all the tournaments and stuff. I was following him as well. And then eventually we just, you know, we kept talking, kept in touch. And then, you know, we've always been, you know, decent friends through the internet. And then we met up and we really just kicked it off and really enjoyed each other's presence. And I showed him how to disc golf. I gave him a bag of discs. I gave him, you know, my old Innova bag, filled it up with discs for him.
Awesome.
And yeah, so it's just been a good connection. You know, if I'm ever in the same city, I'm sure he'll, you know, hook me up with tickets, but it's not what I'm expecting. It's more of just a good friend. And it's, you know, it's awesome to be able to share some experiences with him going up, you know, up into the majors, and me going up, climbing the ranks in disc golf. So I think we share a lot in common when it comes to that. That's a big reason why we get along.
Is he any good? How is he at disc golf?
Yeah, he's not bad. I mean, he's got some skill. He doesn't, like I said, he plays so much baseball to where it's obviously, you know, that's where all his time is. So he doesn't really get much time to practice during his season. But he said he likes to play in the off season when he's got his off time. He loves to play. Him and his brother both play. So his brother came out with them. But he can throw. I would say he can throw 400 feet.
Wow.
He can throw. Yeah, which is solid. I mean, for someone that doesn't really play that much, he's pretty new. And I mean, he throws a 96 mile an hour fastball, I think, something like that. So
some of those skills translate.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely translates. So I was definitely helping him when we throughout our round. I was helping him with the putt. I was helping him with his form. And I'm sure he understands form, with especially with baseball. I mean, it's all about form. So I'm sure a lot of it translates over. So, yeah, we were, you know, it was a good round. Like I said, I was helping him out with a lot of stuff and really just shooting the crap, talking, hanging out. And right before, I think he pitched like the couple days after that. So we were just, you know, it was cool.
Well,
he's got
actually
his teammates watching Jomez videos, so that's cool. He's growing the sport. So yeah,
nice.
Some of the other pitchers on the team are also watching Jomez and all the videos of me and everyone else playing. So
that's
cool.
Great. Well, look, yeah. Man, Worlds isn't too far from Chicago. How about this? How about if you win Worlds, you get him to hook you up with some box seats and a little Jumbotron,
dude.
Love.
Oh yeah, dude, that would be awesome. I agree. That'd be a great reward. I'll have to ask him beforehand and then see if he'll accept the challenge.
There we go.
If I win, that's what you get.
There we go. Well, Rick, hey, thanks, man. We appreciate being able to catch up. Always good to talk, and I'm glad you're on the mend. Looking forward to seeing you at Worlds next week.
No problem, dude. Thanks a lot for having me, and great to join the show.
Of course, man. Good luck at Worlds. That was Ricky Wysocki, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio.
Hi, this is Robert Leonard, PDGA Marshall, and this is the PDGA Radio Rules Break. This week, we're looking at a situation that occurred at the 2019 PDGA Amateur Disc Golf World Championship, powered by Prodigy. I was a marshal for this event, and it's not unusual for players to come with us with questions or random scenarios that they come across. A player reported one of these situations to one of our marshals, and I'll be honest, there was quite a bit of discussion amongst us, the marshals. We all had different takes on it, and finally, after a long discussion, we arrived at a ruling. Well, here's what happened. A player threw his drive near the basket and then missed his putt. He then went to putt for his three and missed again. In what was described as basically a boneheaded mental error, he picked his disc up that was used for the third shot that was on the ground and threw it, and it went in from the same spot as where his third shot had just missed from. This sounds a little tricky, but think about it. This happens all the time casually, and we all do it. You miss an easy putt, and instead of walking to where you missed from, you just pick the disc up you missed from and re-throw. But what happens in this scenario if it happens in an event? At first, I thought this could be an abandoned throw, because that allows a player to re-throw from their previous lie at any time with penalty, and then maybe a marking violation since the lie was from a throw was from a lie that was without a marker. I mean, that's basically what happened, right? The player threw again from the same spot without the presence of a mini. But as we read 809.01, we realize that that could not be an abandoned throw, because that does require declaring their intention to the group. So since this was done just kind of spontaneously, this by rule is not an abandoned throw. So then the discussion went to 811 misplay. And Section F defines that a misplay has occurred if the player has played from a lie that is not the correct lie. Well, that's what happened, right? Instead of going to where his third shot landed, he just threw from a lie that wasn't his lie. But here's where it got a little tricky under misplay. The rule does state that if no subsequent throws have been made after the misplay, then that throw is disregarded. The player then plays from the correct lie and receives a one throw penalty. If an additional throw has been made, the player continues to play and receives a two throw. Well, the player never went to the correct lie. If he had gone to the correct lie and thrown his putt in, that would have only been a one throw penalty. So the next throw, which was the tee shot of the next hole, now you cannot correct the misplay, and that is now a two-shot misplay as the rule defines. Ultimately, he was given a six. Four throws it took to complete the hole, even with the crazy rethrow, and then the two-throw penalty. Once again, this is Robert Leonard with the PGA Radio Rules Break, reminding you, as always, rules are your friend.
All right, thanks again to two-time world champion Ricky Wysocki for joining the show. Sarah, have you like watched Rick play much in person?
Actually not as much in person, just because of the way that the tee times are, and I'm trying to get out of there as soon as possible after my rounds to drive home. Probably more so. I mean, we've crossed paths a whole bunch of events, but I've probably watched him on camera more.
Okay. He's so unique in like, he's like halfway up the fairway in front of everybody all the time, and like usually kind of playing on his own little island. So it was nice to talk to him about coming out of his shell a little bit more this year.
Yeah.
I think it's important. So we will see how he fares at Pro Worlds. It's going to be interesting.
Sarah, speaking of interesting, was the Music City Open interesting over the weekend?
It was interesting.
Was it hot?
It was very, I mean, it's always hot here. It was low 90s. This is a cool idea for TDs. This is kind of a side note. The Music City Disc Golf Club is amazing, and they did a, they knew it was going to be super hot and they needed lots of water. And they did what's called a waterfall tournament. So this, the weekend before the event, they ran a tournament at, I don't know if it was one round or two, might've just been one round, probably non-sanctioned too, at a nearby course, a much smaller course than the Beast Ravenwood that we played. And the entry fee was a case of water. And that was for the Music City Open. And I just saw someone post a picture yesterday that they overestimated and they actually had water left over that hopefully they'll use for next year for some events upcoming. But that's one cool. of those. Yeah. I thought that was a really creative way to get more water on the course and not depend on sponsors to supply it. Because that's one of the things that you'll hear about all the time, complaints about events, not enough bathrooms, not enough water. And they had both of those things, more than enough of both of those things. So that was props to the TDs of the event for that.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a fun way of doing things.
Yeah. The amenities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the competition?
The competition was great. There was actually a pretty stacked field. There was a couple drops. So Madison Walker actually dropped. She was the second highest rated female, I believe. Or maybe
Do we know why she dropped?
Something to do with finger pain. Okay. I don't know details. That's all I've heard. So maybe she's resting up
if it's before Worlds, maybe yeah.
For sure. And then Kelly Tucker dropped as well. So we ended up with 15 women in the field. And yeah, the competition was pretty fierce. Do you want me to talk about my
We can do whatever you want. You want to talk about the overall, you want to talk about your performance, whatever you are comfortable with.
Okay. Well, luckily I played with three really good cards. I always talk about how, because this isn't my full-time job, if I were to go out every weekend and just have a miserable time where I'm like on the verge of tears or crying or mad or all those negative emotions, this wouldn't be very fun for me. So one of the biggest things for me is just always to be positive. Always try to have fun on my card. If I haven't played with someone a whole lot, I'm kind of a talker and I can read people. Like, I have high emotional intelligence, I feel like. So I can read people. If they're not like going to have a full length conversation with me, that's fine. I'm going to leave you alone. But I like to get to know people. And I like Erica Stitchcomb. We haven't played together that much. And so she and I were kind of talking about what her plans were for the year. I got to play with Callie McMorrin in the first round. So she and I were talking about, she just switched teams to Innova from Dynamic.
Yeah, like mid season.
Yep. So we were talking about, I run the Innova women's team Facebook page. So I was kind of telling her all about that and asking her what discs she's throwing. I was like going through her bag and seeing what she's got lined up and talking apparel and all that sort of stuff. So that was fun. But anyway, back to the competition. So just to preface all of that. So I didn't play how I would feel my best. So basically the front nine is, in most people's opinion, a little bit easier than the back nine. And each round I shot under par on the front nine. I think I shot 2 under par, 3 under par, and 1 under par. As soon as I got to the back nine, I just could not stop making mistakes. There's that hole that you saw me throw on for the National Disc Golf Day. That's actually a par 3. It's very long downhill. There's,
is that like
OB,
the only par 3 on that course?
The only par 3? No. There's a lot, it's more like par 3s in the front nine on that.
Okay.
There's a few. But that's difficult because there's OB road on the left, OB cart path on the right, and it's like straight downhill, if you couldn't tell from the video, and it's a par 3. So that hole, I made a couple mistakes. And then right after that, there's an island hole. And the second and third day, there was some wind. And then there's some water holes. And then it's just like, I think it ends par 5, par 4, par 5, par 5.
Ooh, brutal.
Yeah, so it's super brutal. And ton, I think there's a lot more elevation change and length, obviously, on the back nine. And just a lot of opportunities to make mistakes. And so I would have a really good hole, and I would like birdie one of the par fives or something, and then the next day would mess up a different hole. And so Katrina Allen and Austin Hannum stayed with us the whole week, and we were kind of just comparing notes, like, why does she shoot six down and I shot plus five? Like, how could that be? A, she's Katrina Allen and does this full time and is amazing. Sure. But I was just kind of picking her brain about how she analyzes courses. And she said something kind of funny, like, so it's also funny because Sean, my husband, designed the course. And she was like, man, I was trying to figure out hole so-and-so and like what you're trying to do to trick me. So each hole, and I've thought about this for a while too, is like it's like a separate challenge. It's like a separate puzzle. And there's one hole in particular where there's like an OB cart path that kind of, squeezes the fairway a little bit right in the landing zone for the men, for the women. There's an MPO and an FPOT. And some people were like, man, that OB is really unfair. It's like right where we're going to land. It's like, yeah, duh.
That's like, the point, right? Yeah.
That's like the whole point. Like, you can't just throw as far as possible and expect just to land in the fairway. You have to think about your placement off the tee, or else everyone's just going to land in the fairway and it wouldn't be challenging. So things like that. And she was saying that she would like par everything or par out on the front nine. And then she would just go on like birdie tears on the back nine. And that's where she was picking up her strokes. And we were like, man, if we put my front and her back together, it would have been super great round. But that's really where she picked up a ton of strokes. She, because she has a lot of distance, she actually eagled one of the par fives on the front nine the last day. But her ability to keep it in bounds, to her knowledge of her discs, her comfort with her discs and the wind.
Huge.
I was wondering if she threw any rollers on any of the holes, and she said she didn't. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then I think just generalizing what got me the most on the back nine was my fear of my approach shot. So there's several holes where the basket is like on a slope. And if you throw too far, then you're throwing down a hill. But there's no danger. There's no out of bounds or anything like that. And I would put my approach shot way too short, like 50 feet short, because I was scared of going past the basket. Well, that's asinine. Like, I should go for the basket. If the worst comes to worst, I'll be 50 long, but at least I gave it a chance of going under the basket or maybe even going in the basket. So things like that, that I just kind of took myself out of it, or throwing two under stable, which is something that I need to remember for Worlds on the golf course. Like, I throw tons of under stable plastic, and I can't always trust it in a wind if I put more height on it.
Yeah.
So I think those are the things that got me. And I did not finish in the top five. I apologize.
Well, no. Okay. So I wanted to read a quick email from listener Frank Garcia. And this is the title of the email is MCO Win-Win. And he says, so if Sarah doesn't finish top five, she at least keeps Steve from getting the points. And conversely, if Sarah does get top five, is she disappointed because Steve gets the points? So which one are you feeling more? Are you feeling more disappointed that you didn't get top five, or are you okay because then I also didn't get points?
I mean, I care a little bit more about my disc golf game than I do about getting points on this podcast.
That's the correct answer. No, good, good, good. No, I thought that was a fun email, though. Thank you, Frank, for sending that in.
Yeah. Also, if I had gotten top five, I would have cashed. So definitely
Nice.
The top five finish. I would have gotten you 1 point for that.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of top five, Katrina ended up winning the event by 16 shots, 17 under par total. Missy Gannon, Erica Stinchcomb, Lisa Fakus, and Callie McMorrin.
Yep.
Rounded out top five. And then on the MPO side, man, Chris Dickerson ran away with the thing. 8 shots.
Oh my gosh.
26 under par finish. Calvin Heimberg, Jordan Castro, Sam Lee, and then Brian Earhart and Nate Perkins time for the last slot in the top five. Now, Sarah, something I did want to ask you about, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here.
Okay.
I saw some of the online chatter.
Yes.
About the course and its length and design. What's, I don't know, and I could ask Sean about this too, but I mean, like, what was the, what's the prevailing sentiment on that? Do you think there will be some changes to the course after this year? Or is it too early to tell at the moment?
I don't think the length will be changed. I know there are, like, hole 9 specifically, it's a par 5, I believe. He wanted to, so right now the men and the women's baskets are kind of out in the open, just all the way up a big hill. And Sean's original design was to tuck it off into the woods on the right. But when they started digging around in the woods, there's like rebar and stuff over there. So that, I know that pin placement will probably be changed. Maybe removing one of the island holes. I don't think length is concerning to Sean at all whatsoever. He might say something different, but it's more of maybe making it a little bit more challenging and introducing a little bit more out of bounds, like flags or ropes or things like that to force you to be a little bit more accurate
Off of your tee shots, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's kind of the vibe that I was getting. I mean, I know Sean's, I've talked to Sean enough. I know his theory is that he wants disc golf to be golf. He wants it to be where you have to think about your placement of your shots, not just deuce or die kind of stuff. He wants par 72s. Yeah. And so I know that's what went into this design. So I'll be curious to see. I know he's always tinkering, and I'm sure the club there will take the feedback and if you add a little bit of string in there, it changes things quite a bit.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, just obviously Chris Dickerson and Katrina kind of throw them out because they crushed the course, but, but it's not like, you know, Calvin Heimberg, for instance, only shot one round over his rating.
Like,
this was a long, quote unquote, open course for the most, I mean, compared to like what we're about to play, Northwoods, Iron Hill, Idlewild. But there's a lot of challenge that for every single hole. I mean, there is water, there is cart pass, there's tons of elevation, there's wind. So,
well, and look, like out of the rest of the field of on the, at least the men's side, you know, it's not like I'm looking at some of the people who are up there, and obviously Calvin and Chris throw pretty far. And I mean, I know Jordan Castro can sling it pretty well, but I don't necessarily think about anyone else in the top five as like super crusher guys. Like they can play the accuracy game. Like Nate Perkins, perfect example. He'll tell you he doesn't have all the distance in the world, but he plays accuracy. And so I think it's good to see. I think it's cool to see some people like that up there and kind of dispelling the idea that maybe it's 13,000 feet and, oh gosh, it's only good for a handful of players.
Something else that Katrina brought up during her acceptance speech is she really likes golf that challenges your mind and your body. She wants disc golf to be an athletic sport. Like this course, this is like a tiny side note. She said to me before that she doesn't think anyone should be allowed to use carts because like, if you notice, she doesn't use a cart and she rarely has a caddy and her bag is like huge and heavy. And she's like, I think it's all part of the athleticism and challenging your body. You know, we're athletes, you know, we're not like running 26 miles, but she was like, I love this course because it challenged your game. It challenged your physical stamina and it challenged your brain. And she had some feedback for Sean just about some specific holes, but I mean, I tend to agree. Like, she and I both, she actually came to the gym with me one night, and she and I are both really into fitness and nutrition. And like, if that's what it takes for a top disc golfer, for someone to be working extra hard on the course and off the course, then yeah, I would love a leg up in that regard.
Yeah. No. And look, I'm all about it. If you have to bust it a little more physically on a course. And that was one of the things I think back to Masters Cup this year, when they started the course going up the hill instead of having that where it used to be like hole 25. That was a big difference. Like, cause there'd be people who would hit the wall when that was late in the round, and having to play up the hill was very physically demanding. Whereas now it almost made it, I heard some players saying that it made it a little bit easier because you had fresh legs, fresh arm, everything getting the hill out of the way with the beginning of the round. So, I think there's something to be said for the more physically demanding courses. That doesn't mean I want to go and play it personally, but there's definitely a place for it. And so I think it's cool that, you know, it's just interesting to see things evolve that way too.
So another takeaway that I had from the weekend was, and I think I'm feeling this a little, I'm more sensitive to this because my husband designed the course, and also it's my, I guess, considered my home course or whatever, but people, just be considerate when you're giving people feedback. I heard so many people being either passive aggressive or just like straight up rude to the TDs of this event, not even to Sean, but some of the TDs, about, oh man, this is just the longest course ever. You just throw and then you throw, and just giving feedback in a way that was disrespectful. My first note is, nobody is forcing you to play these courses. Do a little bit of research.
That would be my take, is like, look into the course before you like, sign up.
Do a little research. If you had asked a single person from that had played this event last year, hey, what's Ravenwood like? They would say long and open. And then you can go to the YouTubes, and there's video from last year. And yes, it's not the same course, but the style of golf is the same.
Right.
So don't come to an event, whether it's wooded, open, whatever, and blame someone for your lack of delight around the type of golf that is going to be played that weekend. Nobody is forcing you to play the event, and no one wants to be on a card with a negative Nancy. And if you do have feedback, that's why all PDGA events have an event feedback form.
Yes.
You can submit feedback. You can give the TDs love feedback. I'm a TD. I try to get people to fill in my event form every year. I have a Google Doc of notes for things that I can change for the next year. I mean, TDs have a thankless job. It means the world to them to get any kind of feedback in hopes that they can make their event better. And if you give it to them in a way that is disrespectful and rude, then they're not going to want you to come back to their event. So just be a considerate person.
Me personally, and most people, I would think, you know, you're going to be less open to accepting that feedback when it's delivered in a constructive manner. Like, it takes just a couple extra minutes to cool down, hit the event feedback form, or just talk to somebody in a civil fashion.
Or just like say this, I learned this in elementary school, like say something to yourself first, think about how it would affect you personally. If it would affect you poorly, then maybe you shouldn't say it out loud, or you need to reconsider the way that you deliver it. I would love to teach like a disc golf communications class, because I think it's so important. It's just, you don't want to alienate the people around you. Just assume that everyone's doing the best that they can, and just try to be respectful of everyone.
There you go, man. That can go the just life in general.
Yes.
Just be better to people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sarah, let's do some hot rounds, and recognize some of the folks who played out of their gourd this weekend. What do you got over on the FPO side for us?
All right. We actually had quite a few women's only events this weekend, it looked like. Awesome. One of which was Ladies at the Lake, and that was in Delaware, Ohio. That was where I played my first Am Worlds in 2010, actually. Very cool course. The open women's field was pretty big, 9 women, and Sarah Hokum ended up taking that down by 13 strokes. She had 2 pretty hot rounds, but her hottest of the two was a 970, putting her as the 5th hottest rated round of the weekend. So congratulations to Sarah. The next was Katrina Allen, who played the Music City Open and won by 16 strokes. Her hottest round of the week, she actually was very consistent, 982, 978, 980. So congratulations
good.
On those hot rounds. The next was Macy Walker. She played the Blind Hog End of Summer Throwdown. Macy is actually a Tennessee gal. I've played with her several months ago. She shot a 983 her second round. She was in a division of one, so she won that event. And that event was in Waynesville, North Carolina. So congratulations. Awesome to see your name on the list, Macy, if you're listening. The second hottest rated round is Sally West, and it looks like she played at another women's only event called the 2019 Chick Flick, and that was in North Plains, Oregon. She won the open women's division by 6 strokes, and she shot a 991 her first round. So pretty cool. Congratulations to you, Sally. And the hottest rated round was someone that we know pretty well on this show. That would be Paige Bjorkis. She played in another women's event, Rocky Mountain Women's Disc Golf Championship presented by
Discmania.
Yeah. And that was a huge field. That was 13 women. She ended up taking that down by 10 strokes, and her second round was 1,002.
Yeah, 132 total women at that event.
Wow.
And
that's huge.
Her mom won the M Masters Women's 50 Plus division, I Ooh. Believe, in a playoff.
Wow. Good job, Noah.
Oh, no, maybe not in a playoff.
Oh, it's
well,
two
no,
strokes,
they,
yeah.
Well, but I saw Paige post something about a playoff.
Hmm.
The last round isn't updated, actually, on
the
Oh, you're right. Speaking of Paige Bjorkis, she'll be joining us on next week's episode of PDJ Radio.
Yay.
So make sure to tune in to that as she goes in to try and defend her world championship. All right, over on the MPO side, surprisingly enough, 0 hot rounds coming from Music City or the Mid-America Open, which was another pretty big A-tier. Emerson Keith ended up taking that one down. So I'm surprised that neither of those events are on this list. First event on the list is, this is the Prodigy Disc Tour 2019 in, I think you pronounce it Oulu, Finland. And Vina Mäkelä shot a 1058 and Mikael Rasanen shot a 1071. Those are your 5th and 4th hottest rated rounds. Vina Mäkelä is going to end up being on one of our Pro Worlds feature cards. We'll talk more on those next week. Keith Warren shot a 1073. This was out in, this is in Madison, Wisconsin. This was the Here's your title of the week. Ale Asylum and Glass Nickel Pizza present the 27th Mad City Open PDGA A tier.
Wait,
and,
glass pickle pizza?
Glass nickel pizza.
Oh.
Glass nickel pizza, yeah.
There's a glass pickle pizza.
Nope. Keith Warren shot a 1073 rated second round. He ended up coming in 4th place at that event. Eagle McMahon shot a 1074 at the what appears to be the Rocky Mountains Women's Disc Golf Championship Flex Start event that was run in conjunction. That was the only round there. It was a C tier, and he won that event by 3 shots. And then our hottest round of the weekend, Mr. Matt Oram, we will give you a Roll Tide for winning the championship at Pride's Creek in Petersburg, Indiana, a B tier with 96 total players. Matt Oram took that one down. His 1076 rated final round did the job for a 7 shot win. So nice job to Matty O.
Those are our hot rounds for the week. Sarah, we are probably going to have a lot of hot rounds next week coming from Pro Worlds. Let's talk a little bit about some of the festivities leading up to Pro Worlds, because it all kind of starts this weekend with mixed dubs at Northwood. I know we were talking offline. You were potentially going to play it, and then you didn't end up signing up for it. But have you played mixed dubs at Worlds before?
Yeah, the last time I played at Pro Worlds was in Pittsburgh. My thing is that I normally like another practice day. So
sure. Yeah,
I'd rather have a day to kind of focus on the course.
I hear you. The mixed doubles. Well, yeah. So this is it's on Saturday. Now, I will say this. This isn't one of those ones that we have a lot of media coverage of. We might have some social media coverage. I think my hope is that eventually we can get some of this on proper film, because I think it would be a lot of fun, because you look at some of the pairings and some of them are obvious. Some of them are you know, couples, Katrina and Austin, for example, are on the list. But then you see some other interesting pairings of just players who are playing together just for fun. Looking at, for example, Nate Perkins and Evelina Salonen. Like, that's a fun pairing to me.
Yeah.
That should be pretty cool. I did hear that Jeremy Colling had to drop from mixed dubs. He's been kind of battling an injury since European Open. So that one actually doesn't surprise me. He's still playing Worlds. But if you're out there in PDJ Radio land and you're a player who wants to play with Paige Pierce, you should probably hit her up, because she's pretty good and needs a partner, from what I heard earlier this morning. That might have gotten changed by now. So I don't know. Should we do some bonus fun picks for this one?
I think we should. I also need to go over the scoreboard.
Now here, before we do this bonus fun picks, is this going to knock it to where you're going to get first pick for Worlds now?
Yes, but I'll give you.
I don't
you
know first, if I want to waste my fun pick.
I'll give you first pick for both of these. How about that?
All right. I think that's fair. Thank you. I need it. I need the help. You need all the help I can get. So the cool part about this, they're playing this at Northwoods. Northwoods is kind of the wild card, I think, for Worlds this year. And we'll talk about that a little more next week. And I keep saying Northwoods. It's just Northwood.
Okay, only one of them
pointing north. And they're doing a mix of blue and gold tees, I believe, for mixed doubles. And it's still going to be pretty long, I think. So it's going to be somewhere between 7,600 and 9,200 feet, because those are your, or 9,300 feet, because those are the distances for each of the layouts. But anyway, let's make fun picks for mixed doubles at Pro Worlds. But tell us where we're at in the rankings otherwise.
All right, so you got zeros for for everything this week. I'm sorry.
Way to help me out on that one.
I'm sorry. You picked Haley King to win. You picked Haley King and Calvin Heimberg to win. You picked me and Melton for top five. We all let you down. Sorry.
I felt better about my top five. I mean, I was in a tough one when you had first pick and you have Kat and Chris Dickerson there.
I know.
That was fine in an uphill battle.
Speaking of that, so I got two for Kat, two for Dickerson, and then one for Lisa Fakus.
Yikes.
So now I have 44 points and you have 34.
Oh gosh, that's bad. I better get some bonus points this week then.
Yes. So are we just going, right. Do you want to do winners and top five? I think we should do that.
Winners and top five?
Yeah.
Okay. Winner for mixed doubles, I'm going to go with Garrett Gerthy, Jessica Weiss.
Oh, interesting.
It's a pretty solid pairing there.
All right. I'm going to go Katrina and Austin.
That's a good one too. It's a good one, but I think Double G and Jessica Weiss are going to help me out. Let's see. Top five is hard, because there's a lot of really, really good players and really, really good pairings here. I would go with Zach Melton and Madison Walker, but knowing that Madison dropped from Music City, I'm not 100% sure about her health level at the moment, which is very important. I'm going to do this one. I'm going to go top five, the German team, Simon Lazat and Antonia Faber.
I saw that one. I like that team.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you're going international, because I had my eye on Kristen Tatar and Silver Lot.
Silver Lot. Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
What if, can I get, I, how about just Paige Pierce and Paige Pierce? Like, what if she just plays, what if like she plays, how about this? How about Paige plays one hole left, one, you know, one shot righty, one shot lefty. She'd probably still do pretty well.
Yeah, it might not be. I
have seen so many.
Oh no, they don't normally do just best shot.
Is it alternate?
I don't know. I'm not sure what it is this year, but yeah, normally it's a little bit more fair than just straight up best shot.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Either way, I'd be curious to see how Paige would do that. So that's mixed doubles. That's on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we have field events with long drive competition, putting competition, skill shot, which is like working on your putts and approaches and things like that. We've got 30 people up for long drive. And let's see, how many do we have signed up for putting? 56 for putting and 30 for skill shot. So I don't know if we need to go down the whole thing and pick winners exactly for all of that, but let's do this. Let's pick winners for long drive, Sarah, but let's not have it be per points. Let's just say who we think is going to win. So you've got Simon Lazat, Garrett Gerthy, David Wiggins Jr., Kevin Jones, Anthony Barella, Drew Gibson. Like, there are some crushers in this field. On the women's side, it's Jennifer Allen, Paige Pierce, and Katarina Stallesen from Norway. Cool. So, I don't know. Who are you? I think probably just for the sake of fairness, we should just pick one from the men's side, because there's only three on the women's side.
Sure.
I'll defer to you. I'll let you have first pick for this one.
Okay. I'm going to go Simon.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with, I believe Kevin Jones won it last year, and he's coming off of the Idlewild win. So I'm going to take Kevin Jones for a repeat distance championship at Pro World.
I wonder what he throws. Was he sponsored by Prodigy at this point?
No,
last
he
year?
Was not.
No. Yeah. I wonder what he'll throw.
I don't know. D something.
Yes.
Probably D2s, if I had to guess.
Yeah, that would make sense.
D2, the Mighty Ducks. That's like the joke I always make, and nobody gets it because I'm just dating myself with Mighty Ducks references.
I remember the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. And then, obviously, you know, putting, skill shot, edge. I think James Conrad won putting last year. I don't remember who won skill shot last year. I apologize. But those are our field events. They are just kind of the ramp up to Pro Worlds, which starts next Tuesday, which means Sarah and I will do our best to get you a podcast before that starts. We're going to have to figure out when we record that one, probably Monday.
Yeah.
And real quick, because we've already been kind of getting some questions, we haven't put our like how to follow Pro Worlds article out there yet. But if you are listening to the show and want to know how to follow Pro Worlds, we are going to have Central Coast Disc Golf on MPO Chase and FPO Lead for post-production. Jomez will be on MPO Lead for post-production. And then Smashbox is going to be there doing live coverage. But for signal purposes, we are not able to get two rounds per day. At this point, what we have is it's going to be... they're going to have... Whenever the women are playing at Sunset, they will be on live. And whenever the men are playing at Eureka, they will be on live. And both of them will be live for their final rounds on Saturday. So one round per day, Tuesday through Friday. I believe Tuesday is going to be MPO, Wednesday FPO, Thursday MPO, Friday FPO, and then both on Saturday. So we'll get the full schedule out next week. And that just gives you a little quick teaser for Pro Worlds in Peoria, Illinois. We'll have full preview episode next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah. One more quick shout out since you just sent me a little message. I was watching Paul Macbeth and Hannah Macbeth's Finland vlog before we started recording the show. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's highly entertaining. Hannah does a really nice, fun job of putting together these behind the scenes videos that just give you some insight into what they're doing every day. It's pretty cool. And just, it's a lot of fun. And I'm not just saying that because I ended up being in it in several spots, which was kind of, it's kind of funky. But it's cool. And I just, it's weird. I never really thought I would like that kind of stuff, but between Hannah's stuff and like Eagles vlogs, I really enjoy the behind the scenes lifestyle stuff. I like seeing what the players are doing when they're not just on the course the whole time.
Yeah. I've watched a couple other things too. And, Eagles vlog as well. They're enjoyable and make me a little bit jealous of the full-time traveling disc golfer.
Yeah. But then if you're a full-time traveling disc golfer, you'd have to make a vlog about it too. So then you'd also be a full-time traveling blogger.
True that.
Yeah.
I have two shout outs. One shout out to the IT team of the PDGA.
Yeah, dude.
They snuck in like a little Easter egg.
No, they always over do the this. Weekend.
I was just looking at something and I was like, oh, there's a new tab here, which would be great for Steve and I on the podcast. But it's, if you go to your player page now, where you see like your ratings detail and your ratings history, there's a career wins tab.
Yes.
And you can go in and see all the events that you finished first place.
I love it. That I have been told is the brainchild of Pete Crist, one of our nice tech guys. I'm going to my career wins section, and sadly, there's nothing. It's very sad. but it is like, for me writing articles at events, this is going to be so helpful because there's so many times where I can never remember, oh, how many majors has this person won? Or, oh, when was their last NT they won? Or how many blah, blah, blahs have they won? And now I can go career wins and I can sort them by tier or sort them by date. I love it. Pete Crist, you're the man.
Agreed. I was stoked to see that. My other shout out is to Katrina Allen. She actually gave me her first place trophy from this weekend. I forgot to say that earlier. Yeah. She just got too many of them. No, she, earlier in the week, the TD sent me a picture of the trophies and it was a ukulele and she was in the car with me and I was like, oh my God, look at the trophy. It's so cool. And I was like going on about it. I was like, the ukulele is so cool, blah, blah, blah. And, when she went up to do her acceptance speech, she was like, I guess she used to play the trumpet and she was like, oh, I used to play the trumpet. I don't play the ukulele and I want to give this to my friend, Sarah.
Nice.
And I told her that I learned a song on it and I played Three Little Birds by Bob Marley and recorded it and sent it to her today and put it on social media. So, it's cool. I had her sign it. It's an Alvarez baritone ukulele. I found out as I was trying to tune it.
Wow.
And it's got a cool design on it that, this local disc golfer named Shantae, who's an artist, and does lots of trophies, designed the front of it. So, yeah,
that's great. Now, was there not having been to Music City, like, do they change the instrument for the trophy every year?
I don't remember what it was last year. I didn't stick around for the awards and I didn't win it.
I mean, that'd be super cool. Like if one year you had ukulele, maybe next year they do like a snare drum. Yeah. Like you could do some cool stuff.
I'm not sure what it was last year. Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
So now I've was given the gift of learning a new instrument. So
very cool.
I might take it to Worlds with me. We'll see.
Well, man, that's a good note to end the show on. Some good positive vibes to end the show today.
Yes.
I love it. So Sarah, I will see you for real in person next week. And all of our listeners, we will be back here at the beginning of next week before Pro Worlds. Thank you as always for listening. Leave us some feedback, radio@pdga.com. Put a review out there, even if you think it's not the best show ever, we will still take your reviews. We're okay with that. And
we want the feedback in a positive way.
Yeah, hit the event feedback form on PDG Radio. And yes. As always, thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. We appreciate you sharing the show with your friends. Hit subscribe, share, all that good stuff. We'll be back next week. So for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. That was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other. We'll talk to you soon.